Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 29, 2020. Looking for solace. Marcy Askins, right, and Carla Byrne, left, sisters of Joseph Griffith, hug Pastor Don Weeks after they prayed Friday at the Ector County Courthouse. Families of Layla Hernandez and Griffith, who were victims during a mass shooting, gathered to announce the filing of a lawsuit against the man who sold the gun to the shooter and the gun manufacturer. Odessa mass shooting. Attorney. Lawsuit by victims' families is about accountability. By Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Coming Sunday. In advance of the one-year anniversary of the mass shooting in Odessa, Reporter Telegram coverage includes commentaries from Odessa Mayor David Turner, State Representatives Tom Craddock and Brooks Landgraf, Congressional Candidate August Pfluger, and Editor Stuart Doreen. Midland and Odessa Police Chiefs offer their perspectives. Midland Guild presents quilts to those impacted by the event. Medical Center Health System President CEO continues to serve. Reflections from U.S. Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz. A sister of one of the victims speaks out. Activists talk about work of Mass Violence Prevention Committee. Odessa remembrances of the victims. A lawyer for the families of two victims who died in the Odessa mass shooting said Friday that a lawsuit filed against the gun seller and manufacturing company is to hold accountable those who provided a firearm to the Odessa gunman, who previously failed a commercial background check. The suit names as defendants Marcus Anthony Braziel, the man who allegedly sold an AR-style rifle to Seth Adder before he killed 7 and injured 25 a year ago, as well as Anderson Manufacturing, the company that allegedly sold firearms and gun parts to Braziel. The family's lawyer, John Sloan, said during a press conference Friday that Anderson Manufacturing sold gun parts to Braziel that he later used to manufacture the rifle used by Adder. Braziel did not have a manufacturer's license or a federal firearms license, which is required for repeatedly purchasing and selling firearms with the motive of making a profit. Braziel's residence was raided by the FBI and the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives in September 2019. 29 guns were seized from his home in Lubbock, according to media reports, and the investigation is ongoing. Carla Byrne, the sister of 40-year-old Joe Griffith, who was killed by Adder, said she's waited for a year to see Braziel arrested for his role in the shooting. Seth Adder received his punishment in a hail of bullets by police that day, she said during the press conference. Mr. Braziel was able to get up each day and go about his life. Byrne's family and the family of 15-year-old Layla Hernandez, who was also killed on August 31, 2019, are seeking monetary relief of over $1 million, according to a copy of the lawsuit. Byrne said the lawsuit was the second best thing to Braziel being in jail, which Sloan said is not guaranteed to happen. Byrne spoke directly to Braziel at one point during the press conference, telling him he had, quote, blood on his hands. My message to you, Marcus Braziel, is you don't get to sit back on your conscience and sell a gun to anybody walking into your home. You don't get to do that because you have messed with the wrong family, and we are not going to take this lying down, she said. Energy. Crude prices end week with gain. By Mella McEwen. McEwen at MRT.com. Crude prices remained in a narrow range this week, as Hurricane Laura appeared to spare much of the energy infrastructure along the Gulf Coast. That led traders return their focus to market forces such as oil demand, which has appeared to stall this month, according to Bloomberg. After surpassing the $43 mark Tuesday, West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange retreated, losing 7 cents Friday to close at $42.97 per barrel, up from $42.62 at Monday's close. The posted price ended the week at $39.50 a barrel. Natural gas prices continued to remain near $2.50 per MCF. Thursday, the commodity jumped 12 cents, more than erasing 2 days of declines. On Friday, October became the new near-month contract and closed the week at $2.66 per MCF. The negative $38 oil price seen April 20 was a figment of a system that lets paper barrels be traded, said Steve Meltzer, owner of Meltzer Consulting, during a University of Houston webinar examining the Permian Basin's role in creating geologic value from utilizing carbon dioxide. The Saudis said U.S. shale was taking market away, so they tried to crash the price to instill a sense of reality. Couple that with COVID and demand destruction and prices tanked. Now they've climbed back to $40, he said. There is a lot of feeling in Midland and in most oil centers that we found a new normal in the 40s. The next 5 years or so, that's where prices are probably going to be on average. So let's consider that negative a widespread anomaly. Steve Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of Elevation Resource, told the Reporter Telegram by email that he expects the company will realize $40 a barrel prices this month after transportation fees. Natural gas liquids prices have recovered from a low of $1.83 per barrel to over $10 per barrel in July and looking better yet in August. We had to pay our purchaser to take our gas in March and April, but the sale of wet gas is back to contributing revenue, he said. The outlook for West Texas natural gas prices is good, with the futures market predicting well over $2 per MMBTU in December. Let's pray that happens. With the rig count remaining so depressed, the outlook for oil supplies in the Permian Basin and U.S. is declining, thus supporting the return of $50 oil at the end of the year, Pruitt said. The big draws in oil inventories in the U.S. over the last few weeks supports that our markets are undersupplied, perhaps due to some discipline from Saudi Arabia not cramming more oil into the Gulf Coast. Politics. Will Hurd reflects on lessons from time in office. Outgoing congressman says Permian's energy resources have national security implications. By Mella McEwen. McEwen at MRT.com. Congressman Will Hurd sees his time serving in the House of Representatives as a learning experience, especially about the region's oil and gas industry. I never understood getting a molecule out of the ground and getting it from point A to point B the way you guys do, he said during the weekly Oil Field Strong webinar presented by OTA Compression, OTA Environmental, and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. The Republican, who is leaving office at the end of the year, said the Permian Basin's energy resources have national security implications. Look at adversaries like Russia, he told Stephen Robertson, PBPA Executive Vice President. They're more of a regional thug. They use energy policy to extort countries in their region. The fact that we can help our allies with their energy demands and needs is to our advantage. Hurd, a former Central Intelligence Agency officer, said the energy industry needs to be mindful that adversaries are targeting the industry. Russia is targeting energy companies, and China is trying to access the country's electric grid, he said. The electric grid is of particular concern because local operators require electricity to produce oil and natural gas. The electric grid is as vital a part of infrastructure as roads and bridges, Hurd said. When people think of cyber attacks, they think of efforts to steal credit card, bank, or social security information, he said. But it goes beyond that, he said, citing as an example Russia's interference in the 2016 election by spreading misinformation and fomenting discord. Taking one electric plant offline may not have a broad macro impact on Texas or the U.S., but it can cause people to freak out about the safety of the industry at a time when there's already debate around the industry. That foments more discord, and that's a classic covert action. Those are things we need to be concerned with, Hurd said. China wants resources and tries to supercharge its resources by stealing what others have done so it can mimic them elsewhere, he said. The energy industry, as part of the national security apparatus, is a target, he said. Hurd said that 10 years ago, the nation's relative energy independence would have been unthinkable. That's why he said it's important to continue making the case and explaining why it's so important. Asked what he's heard from his colleagues in Congress about the energy industry, Hurd replied, "What's so interesting about the industry is there are so many factors the industry doesn't have control over that impacts its bottom line, that impacts its operations. The back of OPEC is broken, and it's broken because of the Permian Basin. Period. End of story," Hurd said. "We need to ensure our foreign policy is in line with our domestic policies, ensuring we have a domestic energy supply. The thing I found interesting is that, in 1983, if this had happened, we would have seen the prices of a barrel of oil, of natural gas, of commodities fluctuate more widely, more erratically. If a missile had struck Iran, we would have seen some changes in prices. When a Saudi Arabian production facility was attacked and bombed, and 20% of the world's production capacity was taken offline for a day or two, that didn't have some of the tectonic impacts. I still don't understand the ramifications of that, but we have to remember our foreign policy has a role to play in that our adversaries and sometimes our allies are looking to use our still energy dependence on others as a way to compel us to behave or act in a certain way. That's why energy independence is so important. The case of Saudi Arabia and Russia's fight over market share is a good example of how they try to compel us to act. Another thing he learned about the industry during his time in Congress is its focus on safety. Its culture of safety allowed it to quickly adapt new protocols against the novel coronavirus, he said. As he prepares to leave office, Hurd said, "The things I will remember are when I was able to battle bureaucracy for people that needed it. Spectrum News just had a 3-part TV series where they followed me around doing constituent outreach. There was the woman, 74 years old, called my office after her husband, a veteran, had died the previous year and she wasn't getting the benefits she was due and about to get evicted from her home, and we helped. A young woman with multiple sclerosis, and because the type of MS she had required a certain wheelchair and she wasn't getting reimbursed by Medicaid. We helped kids in El Paso, living in colonias without access to sewage and clean water. We were able to work with the Development Bank. Those are things I loved doing," Hurd said. "I was able to get 16 pieces of legislation signed into law. That's more than some congressmen with 30-year careers, and I did it under Republican and Democratic presidents, under Republican and Democratic speakers. That shows you can get things done when you put together a coalition." He said that, in crisscrossing the 29 counties in my district, "I've found there's more that unites us than divides us." Hurd said though he is leaving Congress, he plans to remain active in advocacy. "I'm not dying," he said. Coming Monday, Board President to Address MISD's Progress by Stuart Doreen. Estuarine at HearstMP.com. Rick Davis in Monday's Reporter Telegram will provide detail on the decision by the Midland ISD Board of Trustees to take the first steps in seeking a new superintendent. The school board unanimously voted last week to start the superintendent termination process, which could take weeks, if not months, to complete. The hiring and firing of a superintendent, however, is the most important decision a school board makes, according to the board president. Davis, in his article Monday, goes through the district's academic standing from before Riddick's arrival and through the 2019-2020 school year. Davis uses metrics, including student outcome goals and progress measures, to help state the board's case. In short, because the district was making either no progress, little progress, or even worse, regressing on a majority of the goal progress measures regarding student academic performance, on which Mr. Riddick understood and agreed he would be evaluated, we made the unanimous decision to take the first step in seeking a new academic leader for our district, Davis wrote. The board is currently in the process of providing the superintendent with notice of the reasons why the board is proposing to terminate the contract. District officials said Thursday that was expected within the next few days. Superintendent Orlando Riddick's contract is set to expire on June 30, 2022. Welcome to the jungle. Brothers expand Tarzan and Jane Gasson Grill business. More info. Tarzan and Jane Gasson Grill is located at 3399 Interstate 20, Stanton. Visit online bit.ly/3LSIZSG. Stanton. A former U.S. Army surplus store along Interstate 20 in Stanton is being remodeled into the second location of Tarzan and Jane Gasson Grill. The owners are brothers Seth and Zach Covington, who moved to Midland from Mississippi to work in the oil field. Seth moved here first. Zach bought a food truck to get into the food industry. 7 years ago, Zach remodeled an old building in Tarzan that became Tarzan Grill. 2 years later, Seth became a co-owner, and they added on a gas station that they named Jane's Gas. Tarzan and Jane Gas and Grill was officially created. We thought about changing the name if we're trying to branch out or if we're trying to expand along I-20, Zach said. In this small area, a lot of people already know about us and know that we have good food, good service, and clean bathrooms. The project has been delayed because of the pandemic, and construction crews had to work in smaller numbers, but the Stanton Tarzan and Jane Gas and Grill is expected to open at the beginning of September. The restaurant is currently hiring for about 30 positions. The restaurant is known for burgers with fresh smashed patties and burritos with fresh homemade tortillas. They want to be known as the gas station with the best food and the cleanest restrooms. We want people to stop for the food but grab snacks and drinks, as well as fill up with gas while they're here, Zach said. The Covingtons had looked at expanding into Midland or Andrews, but decided on Stanton because they thought the town could use another truck stop. Especially with it being a small town and also being in Martin County, a lot of the people here have either eaten in the restaurant in Tarzan or have had our food working in the field, Seth said. They're really excited about having a new clean truck stop in town. Story and photos by J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hearstnp.com. Two more COVID deaths reported in Midland County, total up to 67. Staff report. The City of Midland reported Friday that two more coronavirus-related deaths took place, bringing the total during the pandemic to 67. Both deaths happened Friday, and both were patients being treated at Midland Medical Lodge. One patient was a man in his 70s, the other was a woman in her 80s. The city reported that both had underlying health conditions. The Midland Health Department also reported Friday there were 38 new confirmed COVID-19 cases, which pushed the number of cases during the week to 157 and during the pandemic to 3,239. The Health Department also showed 927 isolated cases and 432 under investigation for a total of 1,359 active cases, an increase of 20 compared to Thursday. There were 1,649 recoveries, an increase of 7 compared to Thursday. Cases announced Friday are reflective of lab results from Wednesday, according to the city. Coronavirus report. Cases Monday, 12. Cases Tuesday, 40. Cases Wednesday, 32. Cases Thursday, 35. Cases this week, 157. Total cases last week, 194. Total cases, 3,239. Donning the robe. Robin Darr, who retired in February from presiding over the 385th District Court, introduces her successor, Lee Robertson. Governor Greg Abbott appointed Robertson to the bench Monday. She will serve until December 31, or until the person elected in November assumes the bench. That person likely will be Robertson because last week, Midland County GOP precinct chairs voted to name the attorney as the Republican nominee, according to a Reporter Telegram article. Robertson puts on her robe with the help of her husband, Stephen, after being sworn in Monday as judge for the 385th District Court. Robertson looks on as retired Judge Robin Darr prepares to swear her in as judge of the 385th District Court. Robertson's husband, Stephen, and children, Emma, 7, and Ethan, 10, hold the Bible. Rig count holds steady at 254, by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Rig activity this week was unchanged, according to the Baker Hughes weekly rig count. The oilfield services firm said Friday there were 254 rigs at work within the U.S., unchanged from the previous week. The national tally had ended over 20 weeks of free fall and a 14-week string of record lows last week, when it rose by 10 rigs. Still, the count is 636 rigs below the 876 active rigs Baker Hughes reported a year ago. The count has plunged over 60% since March, when the COVID-19 pandemic brought global economies to a halt and sent oil demand and commodity prices plunging. There were 180 rigs drilling for oil, down 3, and 72 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 3 for the week. Texas dropped one rig to 107, 334 rigs below the 441 at work within the state a year earlier. New Mexico joined Texas as the only producing state to lose rigs, dropping 1 to 46. Louisiana was the only state to show an increase, rising 2 rigs to 34. The Permian Basin remains the most active play in the nation, with 125 rigs at work, down 2 from the previous week, and down 304 from the 429 at work in the play last year. The Eagle Ford held at 9 rigs, and the Haynesville, the only play to see a gain, added 3 rigs for 35. Eddy County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian, with 28 rigs, up 1 for the week. Martin County was next, with 22, up 1. Lee County, New Mexico lost 2 rigs during the week, falling to 18 rigs at work within county lines. Midland County saw 13 rigs at work for a second week. Loving County saw the sharpest decline for the week, dropping 3 rigs to 10 for the week. Tom Green County saw renewed activity, with 1 rig active this week. Obituaries. Mary Margaret McGinnis Llewellyn. Mary Margaret McGinnis Llewellyn was born to Michael and Agnes McGinnis on May 26, 1928 in Brooklyn, New York. They moved back to Ireland when Mary was 4 years old. She then moved back to New York to retain her U.S. citizenship at the age of 20. She met a cowboy, Calvin Lou Llewellyn, who was stationed in New York with the United States Army. He promised to take her to paradise in Texas. They married in September of 1951 and moved to Midland, where they made their home and raised their 4 boys, Michael, John, Bill, and Paul. Mary worked at the Paperclip Office Supply and also as an in-store product demonstrator for several grocery stores. She loved working with people and never met a stranger. She was a Catholic and attended several Catholic churches. She was involved in Catholic organizations such as the Cursilistas, etc., other organizations such as the Red Hat Club, Rock and Mineral Club, and the Irish-Scottish Society. Mary was preceded in death by her husband, Calvin Lou Llewellyn, whom she was married to for 63 years, her son, Michael Llewellyn, her granddaughter, Andrea Llewellyn, sister, Patricia McGinnis, and by her parents, Michael and Agnes McGinnis. She is survived by 3 sons, John Llewellyn and wife, Lagatha, Bill Wild Bill Llewellyn of Midland, and Paul Llewellyn of Eastland, Texas, a sister, Agnes Rose of Connecticut, 8 grandchildren, 14 great-grandchildren, 20 great-great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-great-grandson. Viewing will be Friday, August 28, 2020, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Saturday, August 29, 2020, at 11 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Burial will follow to Rest Haven Memorial Park. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Norma Wester. On Friday, August 21, 2020, at the age of 87, Norma Wester was granted her angel wings and entered into our Heavenly Father's home. Norma was born October 4, 1932, in Erick, Oklahoma, Beckham County, to Elmer Lee Irwin and Lula Mae Irwin. She was raised up on a farm along with her younger brother, Bill Irwin. going to school in her younger days to Hext Switch County School. The family then moved to Sayre, Oklahoma, where Norma graduated from Sayre High School, then later graduated from Sayre Junior College. Norma later met and then married Benny Wester from Eric, Oklahoma. Benny joined the U.S. Air Force cadets, which had them stationed several different places. Norma and Benny arrived in Midland, Texas in the early 1960s and made Midland their forever home. As a couple, they enjoyed traveling to many places. They spent most summers splitting their time between fishing at their lake house or at Ruidoso, New Mexico, racing the horses they owned. Norma, always the perfect and gracious host to many dinners, weekend getaways, company parties, and get-togethers. Norma and Benny brought into the world three children, Ricky, Debbie, and Shanna, whom she loved dearly with all her heart. Norma enjoyed playing bridge, watching birds, fishing, attending her kids' sporting and activity events. Norma was a wonderful cook, passing along many family homemade recipes. After her children were grown, Norma enjoyed being a beautician. She always took great, great pride in her home, children, and appearance. A strong, proud woman with a heart of gold that she instilled into all of her children. Norma cherished her family with all her soul, loving, caring, and giving advice, even up till the end. Two of her favorite sayings amongst many that she would tell her children were, "Find a way and just do it," and "This too shall pass." She will greatly be missed, but her love and legacy will forever live on through her family. Norma is preceded in death by her father, Elmer Lee Irwin, her mother, Lula May Irwin, and her husband, Benny E. Wester. She is survived by her son, Rick Wester, Ruidoso, New Mexico, daughters Debbie Wester McCord and husband Paul, Midland, Texas, and Shanna Wester, Midland, Texas, brother Bill R. Irwin and wife Nita, Lovington, New Mexico, sister-in-law Darlene Wester Mars and husband Troy Eric, Oklahoma, grandchildren Tori Wester, Benny Wester, Crystal Mitchell, Michelle Richards, Sage Kinney, six great-grandchildren. A viewing will be held August 30, 2020, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland, Texas. A graveside service will be August 31, 2020 at Rest Haven, Midland, Texas at 1 p.m. The family would like to personally thank the caregivers and nurses for the past 3 years for your kindness, love, and care for our mom. Death notices. Claude Wesley Smith, Jr. Claude Wesley Smith, Jr., age 63, passed August 26, 2020, at his residence in Midland, Texas. He is survived by his daughter, Samantha Smith Oristano of Rockford, Illinois. As per his wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Enrique Solis. Enrique Solis passed away August 27, 2020. A rosary will be held Monday at 9:30 a.m., August 31, 2020, at Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will immediately follow at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Survivors include his wife, Martina Solis, daughters Juanita Morin, Marisela Lopez, Olga Navarrete, Araceli Solis, sons Enrique Solis, Hector Solis, Joel Solis, Jorge Solis, Joe Solis, Robert Solis, and one sister. Services are limited to family only. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, August 29th, 2020. Section A. Gifts of Love, Offer Hope, by Sam Waller. The Midland Quilters Guild presented about 60 quilts to victims of the 2019 mass shooting, their families, and first responders in the culmination of a months-long project. Guild President Rachel Garibay said the Permian Strong Quilt Initiative was a show of love through quilting to those affected by the tragedy. On August 31st, 2019, Seth Ader drove around Odessa and Midland randomly shooting people. He killed 7 and injured 25 others before he was shot to death near Odessa's Synergy Theater. "It just started out that when we heard what had happened," Garibay said, It just makes you think that it could have been any one of us who were affected. We wanted to do something to show our support for those people who were harmed and affected. So we did what we do best, and we made quilts. We have been working on them for months and months. It was just a labor of love. We had so many people involved and were very appreciative of everybody who helped us out. Garibay said the project quickly expanded beyond the group's 90 members to include quilters from across West Texas. We put the word out through the quilting community and people started donating blocks to us to make the quilts, Garibay said. We decided on the Friendship Star design as our quilt block because it embodies the friendship that we want to share with folks in both communities. We started receiving blocks from all over the Permian Basin, primarily Lamesa, Odessa, of course, all of Midland, and even as far as El Paso. We got enough blocks to make about 60 quilts. We want to bless the survivors' families, the victims, and the first responders because we feel it's very important to show them how much we appreciate all that they have done and continue to do. Garibay said the quilts are mostly lap size, about 50 by 70 inches, made of 100% cotton fabric. They're all pretty much the same, she said. We tried to make them 3 blocks by 4 blocks with a couple of borders. Some people did make quilts that were 4 across by 5 down, so they were slightly larger. Our request was that they be kind of lap size, and that's a little bit larger than lap size, but they're all about the same size. Despite that sameness, Garibay said each quilt also is unique. We asked for the Friendship Star blocks to be any colors, she said. It's just amazing how they turned out so different with the same block, the same type of design, but they all look so different and beautiful. We got like 3 blocks from one person, 1 from 1 person, 10 from 1 person. We just kind of mixed and matched as best we could and put them into sets of 12 and created a bunch of different quilts. Garibay said each part of the quilts carries a special meaning. The top, with its many colors and patterns, represents the community and the many individuals who are in it, she said. The batting, the center or the filler of the quilt, is the warmth. It represents our hope that the quilt will bring warmth and comfort, peace and healing to the person who receives it. And the backing is the strength that supports the other layers. It represents the strength of the recipient, the support of their family, community, and nation. Each stitch that holds the layers together represents the love of the makers. The quilts were handed out Thursday at the Family Resiliency Center at 4682 East University, Suite D in Odessa. We were trying to figure out a way, given the current health conditions, to get the quilts out to the people, Garibay said. We had planned to do it back in March, when we finally got all the quilts done. Then the shutdown hit. We want to make it something for the anniversary. We're going to set up a display of the quilts and the families can drive by. If they don't want to, they don't even have to get out of the car. They can see the quilts and get the one they want. Garibay said firefighters and law enforcement officers will be included in the recipients. The people who can't make it, whether they don't want to be out at this time or they don't live in the area anymore, we're going to mail them their quilts to make sure everybody gets one. Garibay said the project kept the entire membership of the guild busy. We would meet for sewing sessions to start putting the tops together, then send them out to the quilter who put the layers together and quilted it, she said. There were just so many different members of our guild who were involved to get those together. Somebody else embroidered the labels. We have Permian Strong made with love on all the quilts so that they know where they came from, and we hope that they find some comfort. We had just everybody involved doing different things, from making the blocks all the way to making the whole quilt. While the coronavirus pandemic has forced the guild to curtail its gatherings, it still holds virtual meetings and continues to welcome new members. We used to meet at Alamo Heights Baptist Church every second Tuesday at 7 o'clock, Garibay said. Right now, because of all that's going on, we are doing Zoom meetings. Anyone interested in joining us through a Zoom meeting or just learning more about our guild can contact me at 915-241-0691. Families of victims file lawsuit. Grievance aimed at expansion of background checks by Royal McGregor. Just after 11 a.m. Friday morning, family members of two of the deceased mass shooting victims exited the Ector County Courthouse after they filed a civil lawsuit against a gun parts manufacturer and the person who supplied the AR-style firearm that was used in Odessa's mass shooting a year ago. The families of 15-year-old Layla Hernandez and 40-year-old Joseph Griffith are asking for more than $1 million in damages. The civil lawsuit was filed against Anderson Manufacturing, a Kentucky-based gun parts manufacturer, and Lubbock gun dealer Marcus Anthony Brazil. Attorney John Sloan, who represented the families of Hernandez and Griffith, stated in a press release issued Thursday, "Our clients want to hold accountable those who manufactured, profited from, and supplied the AR-style weapon used in the shooting." Sloan explained further Friday morning that in addition to the monetary damages, that he hopes the law can be expanded for universal background checks. Statistics show that 97% of the people in America, that's counting Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, everyone, say there should be universal background checks, Sloan said. "We believe when the facts of this case come out, it's going to show that if that law were in effect, this gun sale would have never occurred." Carla Byrne, who is one of Joseph Griffith's sisters, said during the press conference that she has no intention of taking anyone's gun away. She said that universal background checks could help ensure an attack like this doesn't happen again. Byrne detailed that if federal bill H.R. 8 had been passed, 36-year-old deceased gunman Seth Aaron Ader would have had to go through a background check when he purchased the AR-style firearm from Brazil. Ader reportedly failed a background check when he attempted to purchase a firearm in 2014 because he had earlier been adjudicated a mental defective and was temporarily committed to an institution. Ader terrorized Odessans for nearly an hour as he killed 7 people and injured 25 others during a shooting spree that began on I-20 in Midland County and ended with him being shot to death by multiple law enforcement agencies at Odessa's Synergy Theater. "None of this will ever bring my brother back," Byrne said. "My brother had a life that was stolen from him. I know with 100% certainty that I can't sit idly by and just be sad. I can't watch on the news anymore kids being killed in schools, anymore people being slaughtered in churches and in synagogues. Will I feel better? Will I feel like something positive has changed when H.R. 8 passes? Yes, we need that to happen." Byrne also answered the response that a criminal is going to get a gun anyway. Byrne explained the criminal's will, but if H.R. 8 passes, the justice system can prosecute the person who sold the gun without a background check. "That's what we are fighting for," Byrne said. "That's all we are fighting for." The lawsuit was filed 3 days before the first anniversary of Odessa's mass shooting. Sloan said after the news conference that since the lawsuit has been filed, Anderson Manufacturing and Brazil will each be served by certified mail. He said once they were served, they have roughly 20 days to answer the lawsuit. "Hopefully we will be able to take Brazil's deposition," Sloan said. "That's one of the goals." Byrne, the Executive Director of Career and Technical Education at Ector County Independent School District, said she plans on taking Monday off from work to go out to the golf course. She explained that Griffith was an avid golfer, and though she admitted she isn't very good, she wants to spend the day remembering her brother. "We are going to spend the day thinking about and honoring Joe," she said. Griffith's family wants lawmakers with backbone. Sister says mass shooting victim had gun in his car, but was taken by surprise. By Bob Campbell. Remembering Joseph Bryan, Joe Griffith, his family says the enactment of a common-sense gun sale law would be the best kind of memoriam to honor him and the 6 other people who died and the 25 who were wounded on the blackest day in Odessa history, August 31st, 2019. The Texas House Select Committee on Mass Violence and Community Safety convened at Odessa College last November 7th to hear members of Griffith's family and others testify about the need, but there has been no indication since then that the issue will be addressed in the legislative session opening January 12, 2021 in Austin. Carla Byrne of Odessa, Griffith's sister, said in a July 22nd email that she spoke to a member of the Springfield, Virginia-based Gun Owners of America on her way out of the hearing. This man, tall and looming in his GOA shirt, stopped me and said, "We don't agree on things, but I'm sorry about what happened to your brother," she said. After listening to hours and hours of paranoid rhetoric from his GOA cohorts, I looked up into his face and saw kindness. I said, "Thank you, sir. Can I ask you a question?" "Sure," he said. "I've been sitting in here listening to the rhetoric about good guys with guns. I want you to know that my brother owned guns, lots of them, and had a gun right there in his car. But do you think his being a good guy with a gun helped him that day? I mean, how was he to know, on his way to take family pics, that he was parked at a red light, not next to the postman, but a monster posing as a postman? How was he to know that he should get his gun out and hold it up at the ready like he was in the wild, wild west? His being a good guy with a gun was useless that day." He looked down at me with sympathy and only shook his head with tears in his eyes. This sweet man messaged me later and said I had shown him another perspective and helped to change his views. Byrne acknowledged that 71-year-old Jack Wilson, who killed a shooter last December 29th at a church in White Settlement, was a good guy with a gun, but she said the Odessa shooter should not have been able to buy a 5.56mm AR-15 assault rifle in Lubbock because he was known to be mentally unstable and assaultive. "What about all the bad guys with guns?" she asked. "Shouldn't we try to ensure that there are some walls around them and their ability to obtain a gun? Why are all the supposed good guys so scared about implementing background checks for all gun sales? They're worried that one common sense gun law will snowball into another law and another. But I call that bullshit. We don't allow folks to operate a vehicle without a license. Why in the world do we allow just anyone to purchase a gun?" Byrne, who owns a gun for home defense, said Texas needs politicians with the backbone to do what is right and face the unequivocal result of angering the gun lobby. "If our state representatives had the spine to shun the gun lobby, they might be surprised at the positive response from Americans, Texans, and Odessans," she said. 90% of Americans and 89% of Republicans support universal background checks for gun sales. So what gives? Money. "My brother was a good man. and this should not have happened. It was not God's will. God's will is not for evil. I pray people will listen. I pray our legislators will grow backbones and do what is right. And I pray that Americans will vote for the legislators who address this issue. Griffith was a 40-year-old Odessa High School and University of Texas Permian Basin graduate who had taught mathematics for 8 years at Goddard Junior High in Midland, and since 2012 had worked at Beeline Filter and Supply. He and his wife Becky had 2 children. His other sister, Marcy Askins of Midland, told the politicians at the hearing that the shooter was admitted to a mental institution and threw a chair out of a window trying to escape. He assaulted the person who was trying to help him, Askins said. He was on his roof shooting innocent and defenseless animals, and he brought a gun to a confrontation with his neighbor about trash. This is a man who bought a gun legally through a private sale, who should never have been allowed a gun, let alone a gun of mass murder. Describing herself as a conservative Republican whose husband is a member of the National Rifle Association, Askins said, "I'm not trying to take away your guns. I believe a good guy with a gun will stop a bad guy with a gun every single time, but I do not want crazy people to have access to guns. Why do people have to continue dying? If you don't want your family murdered in the street, please do something so you won't be singing happy birthday to your dead brother's grave. We are reasonable people, as we know you are. Please do something so no more people have to die." Griffith's father, Gary, told the committee that his son was an honest man, the best who ever lived, and his mother, Sharon, said, "The lawmakers were appointed by God for just such a time as this. The law failed us, but you have the chance to change it," she said. "When the next mother sits before you, it's going to be on you." DPS arrest and charge man with online solicitation of a minor. A 40-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly attempted to engage in sexual activity with a 14-year-old girl. Gilbert Martinez Ramirez was charged with sexual performance by a child, a second-degree felony, and online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony. On August 20th, Texas Department of Public Safety CID special agents were conducting an undercover solicitation sting, posing as an underage girl in Ector County, a DPS affidavit stated. Ramirez reportedly private messaged an undercover profile posted on the internet. Ramirez agreed to meet an undercover agent who was posing as a 14-year-old girl to engage in sexual conduct. Ramirez reportedly also described sexual acts that he would perform on the child and requested pictures of the child. The undercover police officers reportedly reaffirmed the age of the child they were posing as. Wednesday, Ramirez agreed to meet the undercover agent who was posing as a 14-year-old on Thursday, the affidavit stated. Thursday, Ramirez sent the undercover agent an explicit photograph of male genitalia. He was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Thursday, jail records show. He has 2 bonds totaling $50,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon. Local news roundup. COVID-19 by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,217. Ector County negative 18,540 out of 23,007 tested, with 250 pending, 69 deaths. Recovered, 3,406. Active, 742. Midland County, 3,201 confirmed, 65 deaths. Texas, 601,768 confirmed, with 4,842,362 tested. Total Texas deaths, 12,266. U.S. cases, 5,845,876 total confirmed, and 180,165 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Overeaters Anonymous. Overeaters Anonymous, a 12-step support group, has scheduled the following Zoom meetings. Sundays, 6 p.m. ID 964-152-377. Passcode WE. Mondays, noon. ID 420-773-870. Passcode 061284. Wednesdays, 8 a.m. ID 338-141-943. Passcode 026193. The meetings are free and open to the public. For more information, call 553-1031 or visit oa.org. Benefit Concert. Oil Field Helping Hands has scheduled its second annual Permian Black Gold Bash Benefit Concert featuring Phil Hamilton and Kevin Fowler, September 9th at the Rolling Seven Ranch, 11700 West County Road 122. Doors open at 6 p.m. VIP dinner with the Hamiltons and sponsorship is available. To purchase a table or for more information, visit oilfieldhelpinghands.org or tinyurl.com/Y4ZAAZ8C or email Katie Grimes at katie.grimes@oilfieldhelpinghands.org or phone 512-635-2331. Farmers Market. Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri in Midland, has scheduled the Midland Downtown Farmers Market from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Visit tinyurl.com/Y5S4EK8Y. The United Family Community raises $100,000 for the March of Dimes. Much needed funds to improve the health of moms and babies during COVID-19 and beyond. The United Family and its customers raised $103,407 for March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit dedicated to improve the health of moms and babies. The Scan Tag campaign kicked off July 1st and ran through July 12th at the United Family locations in Texas and New Mexico. The United Family customers chose to add a $1 donation to their total grocery bill to help moms and babies by contributing to March of Dimes. The United Family stores include United Supermarkets, Market Street, Albertsons Market, and Amigos. Since 2001, the United Family and its customers have raised more than $1.2 million to support the mission of March of Dimes. The final campaign results from across the United Family teams have been tabulated. West Texas, Lubbock, South Plains area, $17,821.29. Amarillo, Panhandle area, $20,924.72. Abilene and San Angelo area, $13,406.48. Permian Basin, $4,164.51. DFW and Wichita Falls area, $15,865.09. And New Mexico, $31,225.49. We are so grateful for the funds the United Family and their customers raised, Delia Case, March of Dimes West Texas Executive Director, said. Moms and babies need our help more than ever, and these much-needed funds will make a large difference. The U.S. is facing an urgent maternal and infant health crisis, and we are on the front lines in Texas and New Mexico. We are so thankful to our valued guests for their generosity on this fundraiser for March of Dimes, Mandy Tomlin, CFO of the United Family, said. Because of them, we were able to raise over $100,000 for an incredible organization. The United Family fully supports March of Dimes and their efforts to create a world where all mothers and babies are given the best opportunity to thrive. The U.S. is among the most dangerous of developed nations in which to give birth. Even before the COVID-19 global pandemic hit, the United States is in the midst of a maternal and child health crisis, with more than 50,000 women experiencing life-threatening complications as a result of pregnancy and childbirth, and 380,000 babies born prematurely each year. In Texas, 1 in 9 babies, 10.8%, are born preterm, which can lead to lifelong health problems. March of Dimes is working in communities to reduce the rising rates of preterm birth, maternal mortality, and morbidity. March of Dimes always serves as a reliable resource and support system for moms and babies, and especially now during the COVID-19 pandemic. March of Dimes has created education and support resources, including a COVID-19 fund for women preparing for childbirth and families caring for a newborn. March of Dimes has up-to-date English and Spanish support, information, and planning tools, such as birth plans, on their websites, social channels, and in their apps. In addition, funds support meal deliveries to local hospitals to provide respite for families with babies in the neonatal intensive care unit, NICU, and their medical staff. Support of March of Dimes also helps fund free virtual NICU support program for families, virtual prenatal programs for moms-to-be, COVID-19 interventions and support for moms and babies, programs that promote health equity for moms and babies, and directly combat racial disparities in maternal and child health. Educational programs, including live Facebook panel discussions to get info into the hands of moms and families, and necessary supplies for expectant mothers, including blood pressure cuffs and masks. For more information, visit marchofdimes.org. NACERSANO.org. Or www.theunitedfamily.com. Two Sol Ross alumni inducted into National Rodeo Hall of Fame. Alpine. Tuff Hedeman and Cody Lambert had their legacies cemented after being inducted into the National Rodeo Hall of Fame. Hedeman and Lambert, most notably for Sol Ross, were members of the last national championship team for the Lobos back in 1982 and 83. Hedeman, El Paso-born and West Texas tough, would go on to claim his first title as world champion bull rider in 1986. A New Mexico transplant, Lambert, won the men's all-around at the 1982 NIRA finals, and his saddle bronc career spanned nearly two decades. Some of their further accolades include Lambert placing third in bronc riding in 1982 and Hedeman placing second in bull riding the following year. They have embraced life both on the saddle and on the sidelines for what has undoubtedly been a lifetime dedicated to rodeo. Hedeman and Lambert have since returned to Sol Ross to help continue the success of the rodeo program by mentoring several current team members. Obituaries for Saturday, August 29th. James Douglas, Jimmy D. Rose. James Jimmy D. Douglas Rose, Jr., 82, of Odessa, passed away August 25th. He was born August 9th, 1938, to James and Mabel Rose in Gatesville, and was raised on a farm in Mound. He is survived by his wife, Diane, son, Bradley, daughter, Janine, many nieces and nephews, three grandchildren, and lifelong friends from Gatesville, Billy Paul Barton and Bob Meharg. No service is scheduled at this time. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the charity of your choice. Evelyn Jeanette Laney. Evelyn Jeanette Laney, 79, of Midland, passed away Saturday, August 22nd. A graveside service was held Saturday, August 29th at American Heritage Cemetery. Evelyn was born March 17th, 1941, in Winona, Mississippi, to Willie and William Overstreet. She married her husband in 1961 in Mississippi. Evelyn is survived by her husband, Gerald Laney of Midland, daughters Nandra Laney Dennis and husband Sam of Hempstead, Stephanie Michelle Laney and partner Mary Sanchez of Midland, Chastity Laney Baker and husband Bruce of Midland, and Amanda Laney Dixon and husband Stephen of Midland, son Israel Patino of Odessa, nine grandchildren, four great-grandchildren, sisters Dovey Crowder of Winona, Mississippi, Louise Rogers and husband Seth of Brandon, Mississippi, Bobby Thompson of Winona, Mississippi, Lillian Braswell of Cypress, Texas, and Linda Beckworth and husband Bobby of Winona, Mississippi. She is preceded in death by her parents and two brothers, John and Robert Overstreet. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.